This recording is a Christian Science Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. As the name indicates, the purpose of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute is to promote the words and written works of Mary Baker Eddy, who discovered, founded, and continues to be the leader of Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics through her writings, which include the textbook of Christian Science entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, and she also provided 16 other books which assist in understanding the textbook. She has stated that she was not the author, but was a scribe unto orders of God. Therefore, the textbook is timeless and has been proving that very same function since each of the editions have been written, a total of 432, the final of which was written prior to her leaving invisible form on December 10, 1910. The additional books are for the purpose of covering in detail specific topics and understanding the content of those articles enable a deeper understanding with clarification of things that are in the textbook. In addition to promoting the words and works of Mary Baker Eddy, the Institute also includes about 100 plus other authors who have become proficient in understanding Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics in various degrees. A large number of churches have formed throughout the world, and in the largest cities, there were as many as 40 or 50 churches. However, today, there are a fraction of that amount because the bureaucracy took the path of many bureaucracies, and that is permitted the human tendencies of greed and desire for control of others to enter into the individual consciousness of those that were operating the church bureaucracy, and therefore the church has deteriorated from that large number of churches and a large number of practitioners down to a minuscule amount at this time. All of planet Earth seems to be experiencing the low morals of Sodom and Gomorrah, which Mary Baker Eddy prophesied to occur if Christian Scientists did not do their work. For Christian Science is the sole religion that includes both science and religion, and it being the finest religion of Christianity, which is the only religion which promoted healing and independence based on self-discipline and understanding of the words and works of Jesus. He is truly the way-shower, but he did not leave any information about how his works were accomplished. And this was left to the next true messenger, which was Mary Baker Eddy. And that's exactly what Christian Science does. It explains in scientific detail exactly how Jesus did his wonderful healings. Christian Science is like mathematics. Anybody who abides by the laws can accomplish the results of anyone else. And the laws that are pertinent in this particular instance are the laws of God. They were practiced perfectly by Jesus with the built-in flaws of relating to humanity. And that is proven by the failure of 11 out of 12 disciples to really understand the purpose and the methods of Jesus. For not a single one showed up at his trial before crucifixion, and only one, John, showed up at the crucifixion itself. Also, there were Mary Magdalene, who had been healed and transformed from being a woman of ill repute, and the human mother of Jesus, and three or four others. Even Lazarus, who was brought back to life from the belief of death, and Tabitha, nor her parents attended the trial or the crucifixion. A specific reason why the population of the Christian Science churches has declined to its present minuscule amount of what it had been at its peak is because the bureaucracy did everything possible to destroy the remembrance of who really was the discoverer, founder, and continues to be the leader through her words and works, which is Mary Baker Eddy, by removing her picture from the textbook the day that she passed on and republished it immediately, and destroyed all other things such as the many statues throughout the Atlantic Northeast, and even a special pyramid where she had been prophesied, which was built to scale to the pyramid in Gaza. They blew it up and actually buried the pieces in multiple secret locations so that no one could retrieve them and have it reassembled. This history is only being related here because what she prophesied was that if Christian Scientists did not do their work, not only would there be a decline in the following of Christian Science, but that we would come to a point where we would have to be facing the possibility of the deepest and longest dark ages that history has ever been able to record. And that is where we are at this very day, at the precipice of total annihilation of civilization, or at the very least, the entrance into the Dark Ages as prescribed by Mary Baker Eddy. A statement is credited to Edmund Burke in the 1700s that simply says, "Evil triumphs when good men do nothing." 100 years later, a similar quotation was credited to John Stuart Mill. But the purpose of repeating this statement, no matter who the real author is, lies in just exactly how true the statement is and applies to the history of America from the very inception. It has now been exposed that America has never been really free, but has always been under the thumb of the UK, primarily the City of London, which was set up as a separate entity from England, just as Washington, D.C. was set up as a separate entity from the United States. Evil operates through deception and decoys. And of course, that includes blatant lies. Only by getting closer to God, understanding God, understanding man, and the permanent connection between God and man, can the truth be revealed through God's highest representative, which is man, as is verified in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, whereby 26 states, "Let us make man in our image and likeness," and verse 27 says, "And so God made man in his image and likeness." And later it says that God gave man dominion over everything that he had created, and that everything was very good. And good is defined as being God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. So, in other words, all existence is either God or an expression of God. And the visible is the expression of God, and the invisible is the source, which is God. The topic of this extemporaneous prayer treatment is life of man is dynamic. And the process that we are going to follow is to keep our thought open in this extemporaneous prayer treatment to ideas that flow on this topic, because it is such an important topic at this very moment. Man is a generic term that is utilized throughout the Bible and Mary Baker Eddy's writings to indicate a plural, collective, if not universal, group of humanity. And it has nothing to do with biological differences or age. It is everyone that is considered a human. Now, this is really a false statement about what man really is, because Genesis chapter 1 also refers to man, and yet it refers to man as being the image and likeness of God. And that certainly is not human, but it is the image of perfection. So we're not talking about what appears to be a sinning mortal man, but we're talking about the real spiritual idea of God. We all have the capability of becoming or revealing to ourselves within our own consciousness that we are the true image and likeness of God, but we have to understand the benefits of following that path before we will really live it. And that's why the title of this prayer treatment is Life of Man is Dynamic. Passiveness is not a part of life. It is the opposite of life. It is a form of death. Delay is a form of death. Anything that is other than dynamic, lively, and actively productive is a form of death. If we want to have eternal life, we must express it in our daily activities, all thought and speech, as well as all actions. Jesus said that what we think is the same as what we do. In other words, we're doing it in thought, whether or not we follow through with speech and action or not, it is still totally evil if it is not godlike. There's no gray area. It's not like gold that can be a certain degree pure or silver. There can be no alloy, no dilution. There is a definite line between what is true and what is untrue. And what is godlike is true. What is ungodlike is a misrepresentation, a misconception of reality. Genesis chapter 1 tells us all about the true existence. Genesis chapter 2 begins telling the world about the false expression of existence. The bureaucracy of religion, of Christianity, has been controlled by governments since approximately the year 325 AD. And that was a result of a Council of Nicaea, whereby the governments and the primary religions of Europe made an agreement on who would be controlling whom. The government was to control everything except the promotion, or supposedly the solution for sin, which was to be allocated to religions, and the government would be in control of everything else, which means sickness, disease, and death. As a result, the profession of medicine zoomed because it was actively promoted by the government, as it is today. The problem with this whole setup is that there is no spirit involved. They didn't really understand that the success of Jesus was because of his spirituality. He was able to heal all forms that affect humanity, which included sin, sickness, disease, and death. He did a wonderful thing in the 3 years of his ministry, but he made the very vivid statement that there is more that he could tell to the population, but they were not ready for it. So after he ascended and John was exiled to the island of Patmos, he came back and met with John on the island of Patmos to actually dictate the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation clearly talks about the new man and that the old man must be put off. That's referring to the materialistic view of man as being the old man and the new man being a true follower of Christ Jesus, and one can do that if they follow what is in the little book that is prophesied in the Bible, and that little book is the textbook of Christian Science and Divine Metaphysics. Christian Science and Divine Metaphysics are really the same thing, except Divine Metaphysics zeroes in on exactly how Jesus performed the healings. It is a system, as Mary Baker Eddy defines on page 146 of the textbook, when she says Divine Metaphysics has been reduced to a system. And on page 330, she says that the system of Divine Metaphysics includes a platform that has 32 topics. She calls them planks. And those 32 planks are described in detail from pages 330 of the textbook through page 340. A very fine and probably the finest Bible scholar next to Mary Baker Eddy is Dr. Robert C. Putnam. He was a chemist. His doctorate is in chemistry. And he devoted 35 years to teaching Sunday school. And during that period of 35 years, he composed a series of 10 Bible lessons where he thoroughly researched the Bible and the writings of Mary Baker Eddy. And through that research, he discovered the things that have been mentioned here, as well as so much more. And the book that he wrote, 10 Bible Lessons, is only 169 pages, and he covers every major event and every major character in the Bible, as well as the position of Mary Baker Eddy in the last lesson, lesson number 10. Lesson number 9 is devoted exclusively to Christ Jesus, and lessons 1 through 8 is a complete coverage of the Old Testament. Now, the reason it is only 169 pages is because the book is really a summary and index of all of the things that have been noted. So there is a tremendous bibliography that one needs to pay close attention to, and he specifies at the beginning of each of the Bible lessons what background one should study, and it's all from the Bible and the textbook. Only lesson number 10 is about the textbook and Mary Baker Eddy, but 1 through 9 is the Bible through the New Testament, you know, the complete Old and New Testament. And he describes what has been mentioned in this prayer treatment so far. But as an instruction at the beginning of each of the Bible lessons, he gives a detailed list of what should be read in order to understand what the summary and the diagrams and the index that he gives us is all about. Otherwise, we aren't going to understand the 169 pages that are a very highly condensed and organized summary of the complete Bible and Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy. If one wants to understand the writings of anyone, it's very important to understand the individual that provided the writings. Now, with the textbook, one needs to understand God, because he was the author of the textbook and the other 16 books referred to herein. If one wants to understand an individual, the only way they can do that is to study God, because the Bible states very clearly in Genesis chapter 1 that man is made in the image and likeness of God. So we need to study the source, which is God. We cannot understand anyone that has good qualities at all unless we understand God, which is the source of those qualities. So we must get our thought off of personality and only on to the spiritual nature of the real man, which may or may not be what we see as an individual. There can be no personal attachment to a personality if one wants to be objective and find out the truth. Now, the purpose of this prayer treatment is exactly what it says at the beginning of the textbook, and there are three quotes before the beginning of the preface. And they are as follows. 1. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Jesus, quoted by John. 2. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Shakespeare. Along with that, this statement has been made, and that is that What we see is what we are, and what we are is what we see. The third quote is by Mary Baker Eddy. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. Does God have ears? If we talk to God, does God hear anything whatsoever? No. There is some benefit in addressing God, and that is that we are acknowledging that there is a power that is beyond what we can see, and we're yielding to something that we hope will make things better than what it is. Maybe a specific problem. Maybe a storm. It could be anything. But we're saying, Dear God, will you help me? Or will you solve this problem? Or whatever. So we are giving a release to some degree of self-will and bias that is individually within our thought, and we're turning it over to God. So that does help somewhat, because it is recognizing that there is a power that is beyond what we can see. And of course, that's exactly what God is. It is not only a power, it is the only power, and God cannot be seen. His manifestation has symbols of God. If we see a beautiful tree, or we smell a wonderful aroma from a rose or some other kind of fragrant flower, the beauty or the fragrance, the sight, if we see a beautiful landscape and we recognize it based on its qualities, then we are really seeing the expression of God. So we can see the symbols, but we can't see the source itself, because the source is qualities. It's like the number 7. We can write it down on a piece of paper, and we can see the symbol of number 7, and we can put a plus sign down, and we can put a 2 there, and we can say equals, and then 9. We can look at the whole thing. But what is the 7 and the plus and the 2 and the equal and the 9? They are symbols. They are symbols of the law of mathematics. Everything in the entire universe that is real is symbolized, but the source is invisible. The Bible says if we want to love God, which is invisible, we have to love our fellow man. We have to love the visible before we can even think about loving the invisible. Mary Baker Eddy states that Jesus maximized his humanity in order to step into the divinity. Contemplating that is mandatory in order to understand the steps that are required for transforming wherever we are, with whatever consciousness we have about it, into something better. We must take that time to contemplate, be silent, and let the thoughts of God flow within us, and then release it. Don't even think about it. And we will find that thoughts will come to us of steps that should be taken. And this is a divine message, for it's a solution that the brain cannot conceive or even see. It is the inner intelligence of God that we are reflecting, the knowing of God. the wisdom, the intelligence. These aren't qualities that you can see. You can only see the symbols of them. And we need to be practicing them with all our heart. We need to be man that is alive and dynamic. That's the only true man that exists. And we have to know that no man, no one, can be born with any defect that prevents that. Forget about the theory that we are born a sinner. That is the biggest defect that you could ever think of. And we all are strapped with that belief that is a universal belief that tries to make its mark on every individual, including you and me. Frederick L. Rawson, one of the greatest geniuses of all in Christian Science, he discovered how to go back in time and heal. He gave us a book entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, which includes an A to Z listing of 1,315 items that are detailed with what the materialistic claim is about that ailment, and then giving the spiritual reversal of the true nature of what that item is supposed to be specifying as being defective of something in one's life. And so the solution gives us a perfect thing to start with for healing that particular problem. That chapter is entitled Applied Treatment, and no one should ever read that from beginning to end. Don't even think about it, because that's like reading a medical dictionary. You are instilling into your thought whatever you read. Only use it as a reference for a particular item that you want to solve. And then it is as good as you can get. Because everything in that chapter was a result of his prayerful treatment of his own consciousness for those solutions to those problems to be revealed to him so he could write them down and provide us an A to Z dictionary so we could go right to the problem that we are facing at the moment that we want to solve and actually dissolve it. Mathematics has 10 digits, 0 through 9. It has 4 operators at the basic level, which is add, subtract, multiply, divide. And it has various levels of consciousness, about from the basic to the more advanced levels of mathematics. For example, exponents is a function of multiplying. Every science has elements, operators, and levels. The most pure science of all, and the only true science, is Christian Science. And it looks like you could consider mathematics a true science if you apply it to Christian Science. If you apply it to counting money, or counting cars or houses or something that is a materialistic in nature, then it is not a true science, or it's being misused as opposed to being used properly. One could think of dynamite or a gun. as being evil. But whether it's evil or good depends on how it's used. So mathematics would probably have to be considered neutral and being positive if it's used in a spiritual way, and negative if it's being used in a material way. So let's think about mathematics as positive. And I just mentioned the primary factors in mathematics of being the 9 digits plus 0, making 10 total, and the 4 operators, and that there are different levels. The elements that are tantamount to the digits that are utilized in math, the elements of divine metaphysics are the 7 synonymous terms for God. Because Genesis tells us that God did this and God did that. So the whole existence, all existence, is based on the source of God. So we better begin by understanding what God is. Christ Jesus became successful in his healing ministry because he utilized the function of translation. Interpretation. He would interpret what he saw as a problem that someone was having as being the false view of reality. He was looking at Genesis 1 as being the reality that man is made in the image and likeness of God. So he would translate or interpret the truth. Remember the first quotation in Science and Health. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And those are words of Jesus, quoted by John. So that's exactly what he would do. And he would couple that with what is later versed to us by Dr. Albert Einstein, when he said, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. In other words, search for the truth continuously. And if you think you found it, continue to search for a higher and higher level. You don't want to just accept the first thing that you understand, because your understanding will grow as you have your thought open to higher and higher levels of understanding. When people were trying to split the atom to get it down into smaller and smaller size to try to figure out what is the real core of this thing, they discovered that what they really saw when they got it to the smallest element that they could figure out how to divide it down to, that what they really saw was what they were expecting to see. And therefore, as long as they were expecting to see matter, that's what they saw. But as they refined their thinking, they realized that what they were really seeing was not matter at all, but it was energy that was vibrating at a high speed that appeared to be opaque. But it was really not opaque, it was invisible. We may see the effect of electricity burning something, but that's not electricity. That's the effect of it. Spiritual man is the effect of getting thought in alignment with the one and only source, which is God. Any power that anyone has, Mary Baker Eddy defines very clearly, is a result of the good that we do and embody. Evil has no place in man the true, real man described in Genesis chapter 1 at all. John, being the most advanced student of Jesus, asked him in private, "Is there a material body?" And after he got that answer, he asked him, "Is there a material universe?" We have the whole conversation on the website, and it's under guard in a museum in London. It's never been publicly promoted, and yet it's probably the most important few words that could have ever been put in the Bible. Mary Baker Eddy had to listen to the voice of our only source, and she made it very clear in the textbook. In fact, that is the reason why Einstein dragged his feet before studying Christian Science. He had heard about it, and he kind of put it off. He toyed with it a little bit, but he couldn't get serious about it because he had spent his life studying matter. He was trying to figure out how the universe operated from a standpoint of matter, not in terms of spiritual qualities. It wasn't until his friend, Dr. Underwood, he was a physicist, not a medical doctor, and he was on the Atomic Energy Commission of the United States. Everyone on that commission except Dr. Underwood passed on from radiation. I mean, that should have been a clue. Forget about trying to develop nuclear energy for evil purposes. And that's exactly what they were trying to do. They wanted to blow up the enemies of America, or who they thought were the enemies of America, when they were fighting wars. And they used it on Japan. They finally got it done, and they used it on Japan. And what do the reports say about the effect of the nuclear bombs, atomic bombs, on Japan over the long term? It cleansed the whole area, and new growth came up that was beautiful. New vegetation. So there's an example of where the intent of evil was transformed. Humans stayed out of the area because they were afraid for their life. And of course, that was the evil intent of the United States, to destroy the life of Japanese people. The whole thing of World War I was a fraud. The politicians of America wanted a war because the industries of war-making weapons was a big profitable industry. It took the tax dollars of all the Americans and channeled it into the corporations for the greedy bureaucracies running the corporations. And the purpose of war has never changed. It's always been the same thing. Taking something that doesn't belong to you, that someone else worked for, or was blessed with, if it's like a resource in the ground, taking something that belongs to someone else. Now, if they would reverse the tables, that's a different story. If they say, "Would you mind if somebody steals everything you have?" Oh no, that's a different story. That's a me being violated. But violating you, and you, that's no problem. That's why we have to be very careful that we are not being controlled by evil intent, evil receptivity. Because whatever we dish out, we better be ready to be the victim of as well. Because it never fails. You cannot be an evil or involved in an evil act without hurting yourself. It's impossible. Because everything is in balance. In fact, if you hate someone else, the negativity that you receive is far more than you can ever inflict on someone else by hating them. The mirror reflects right back to the source. It's often been said, if you point your finger in the mirror, thinking you're pointing it to blame someone else, you got your three fingers pointing right back to you. And the thumb also curves around and points back to you. So you do four times as much harm to yourself as you do to anybody else. Four times. You destroy yourself, not them. In fact, a Christian Scientist knows how they can protect their thought from ever being influenced by someone else. And that's what we need to do. We need to know that God is the only source of any action. The title says the life of man is dynamic. We have to know that the man we're talking about is the spiritual man. And the dynamics we're talking about is the activity of God. The life of God. The life from God. Or God as life. Mary Baker Eddy uses capitalization to define the difference between a word that can be applied to an individual on a relative basis, which is the human aspect or the human view of man, compared to the man that is described in Genesis chapter 1. And that man is described in Genesis chapter 1, as stated previously, is perfect. Perfect man. In fact, the last treatment that was done by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute yesterday or the day before is exactly that. It's man being the perfection of the reflection of God. The true man is the reflection of perfect God. Today the focus is on the life of man being dynamic. Never being passive. Never being inactive. Never delaying. Never procrastinating. The true man is very proficient at time management, goal management, priority management, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Because if we want to learn how to heal, we have to use all five senses: seeing, hearing, feeling, smell, and taste. If we fail to use a single one of those, we are cutting out part of the learning process. Because God gave us five senses. None of them are physical. These are mental. Every single one is mental. Shakespeare said it so true, nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Thinking is mental. Anything to do with the mental fits into the category of the very first synonymous term for God as they are used in the order of Genesis chapter 1. Mind comes before spirit, which comes before soul, which is before principle, which is previous, prior to life, which is prior to truth, which is prior to love. That order is the order of spiritual development of any activity in which we are involved. We must translate, interpret the proper way to develop anything to be in that order. And what does it take to even understand what was just said? The founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute was William and Helen Wright. That's with a W. W-R-I-G-H-T. You can discover a little bit about Helen because she was the primary one that was involved. Her husband had another profession, but she made Christian Science her profession. She was a prolific writer, an expert at typing. And so she ended up being the writer for a very popular Christian Science author that devoted his life to writing books on Christian Science. So she was a ghostwriter. She was doing the writing, and he was just directing her. And she finally decided, well, I need to write in my own name. And so she advised the individual, who was not very happy about it, because he was relying on her totally. So she said, it's time for you to make other arrangements, because I'm going to write under my own name. And she gave us some beautiful books of wonderful revelations on things that no one else had done. And one of her books, her final book, in fact, based on the Christian calendar, she was 100 years old when she wrote it. And this was her finest work in IMHO, in my humble opinion. And it's recommended by the Institute that one not only read and study that book from beginning to end, but the chapters 4 through 10, each one being devoted to one of the seven terms for God, of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, that they study that continuously throughout their life. Because she has given us in one chapter everything we need to know about mind. Another one, everything we need to know about spirit. And everything that she tells us is exactly, directly from the textbook by Mary Baker Eddy, or by God. And in fact, she provided 7 volumes, which is the pages of Science and Health that are cut up with the word underlined for each of the 7 terms for God. So one volume is mind underlined, and the second one is for spirit, and so forth. So you can look at every place in the textbook that Mary Baker Eddy used the word mind with a capital M, meaning God. And in addition, there's an alphabetical listing. We have all this on the website. So you can see every word that Mary Baker Eddy used to define mind and the opposites that Mary Baker Eddy used, the opposite to the truth about mind. And she did that with each of the 7, so there are 7 volumes. And it's all on the website. And she starts each chapter with an extensive prose on that topic. And she shows how each word that defines the synonymous term is interconnected with all of the other words and all of the other synonymous terms. Here is an excellent exercise and a tool that will be of value to you forever. If you know what a spreadsheet is, or you just know how to make rows and columns on a piece of paper, you can do it manually. if you don't know how to operate a computer. But there are seven terms that relate to all seven terms. And so if you make a matrix, which is just rows and columns, in the top row, in the very left corner of the columns, put the word mind. And the next row, put spirit, and so forth. Soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And going down the left column, do the same thing. Or you could leave the first column and the top row blank, and you could call that the title, the titles, or the numbers for the rows and the columns. But you go down the left column the same way, the first one being mind, and then spirit, soul, and so forth, down to love. Now, what is the purpose of this exercise? Well, the term where any two things intersect, such as a row and a column, that is defined as a cell, C-E-L-L, or a space, you could call it, a position. Anything that makes sense to you, anything that's easy for you to remember. A cell is a very simple one, because if the columns are labeled A, B, C, and the rows are labeled 1, 2, 3, you could say, okay, I want cell A1. So that's going to be the top row because of the 1, and it's going to be the far left right column because of the A. So cell A1 is intersecting mind with mind. And if you go down to row 2, it's going to be cell A2. And that's going to be connecting mind with spirit. Think of the system of divine metaphysics as having two categories. One is the atmosphere, and the other is the function. And this falls in perfectly with the title, because we say that life of man is dynamic. So the function tells you what it's supposed to do. What does mind do? Mind thinks. What is an atmosphere of mind? Intelligence. That's an atmosphere. Knowing is an atmosphere. Wisdom is an atmosphere. Wisdom is not something you do. Wisdom is an atmosphere. Thinking about how to use the wisdom is a function. So you have to think about what is the atmosphere of the function that I'm interested in exploring. Are you interested in the function of spirit? Then you would use the atmosphere of mind, because you're in column A, where mind is the title to the row, no, to the column, excuse me. And spirit is the function in row 2. So if you want to know what the atmosphere is of mind, then it could be, say, you could call it the intelligence of mind is exploring the function of spirit. Now, how can spirit be a function? Because you could reverse it and go to column 2, where spirit is the function. And if you go to row 1, mind is the function, but spirit is the atmosphere. Think about love. If you do not have the atmosphere of love, you cannot have principle, because principle represents balance and harmony and structure. You're not going to have a structure that is harmonious and balanced unless you have an atmosphere of love. Because love is the thing that neutralizes friction. It eradicates friction. So you must have the atmosphere of love in everything you do, which means all seven items. You have to have love when you do your thinking. You have to have love when you're determining what is the true substance, because that's spirit. You have to have love when you are doing any identification, which is soul. Remember, I said soul is the senses, seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste. Because if you don't have love, you're going to have conflict. And you don't want conflict in anything you do if you want to try to be able to understand God at all. Because God has no conflict. God is principle. Principle is balance. Principle is harmony. Principle is structure. But the system comes from mind because you have to think in order to use a system. So that comes from mind. But principle is the foundation that holds everything together. A way to think about it is a candelabra. You have a stem in the middle that goes through all of the other six. So think of that as being the principle, the structure that connects to all of the others. And then you've got three candles to the left and three candles to the right. Or candle holders. You know, things you put the candle in. But you have to have that structure. It's like, what is the number seven? It means nothing. You have to connect it to something. Are you talking about seven qualities of God? Are you talking about seven houses? Or seven people? Seven personalities? Seven actors? Actresses? If you connect it to something material, then that is the negative use of mathematics. If you connect it to something spiritual, then you're thinking about the spiritual qualities of those actors and actresses. Then it's positive. Everything is dependent upon what you are doing as an object. What are you using as an object? It's a nomenon versus the phenomena. The phenomena is the object. The nomenon is the subject. God is always the subject. He is never the object. His manifestation is the object. That's us. And if we're doing something, then we are the subject, and the object of what we're doing is the phenomena. But the number one nomina is God, always, because God is omnipresent. We can't do a single thing that is good without involving God, because God is the definition of good. There can't be anything that we do that is good in which God is not a part of. You may be unaware of it. I don't know whether the wealthiest man in the world was aware that the intelligence that he has demonstrated to be really, really fine at a very high level. I don't know whether he realizes it or not, but it really comes from one source. And it says in Genesis 1 where it comes from. Everything God made is very good. God couldn't make anything without intelligence. He couldn't have anything, any two things working together smoothly unless he was love. God could not be all-seeing, as it states in the definition of God on page 587, unless God is all-seeing. God has to be all-seeing in order for God to see anything. And God doesn't see matter. God only sees what he is himself. He is conscious of only what he is of himself. We are only conscious of what we are in our own consciousness. We're not conscious of something that is in someone else's consciousness, unless we're involved in a treatment, and then we have the ability to see what others are thinking about. Only for the purpose of assisting in overcoming the belief of evil. And if we use it any other way, then we are evil. We've crossed the line from perfect to imperfect, from good to bad, from spirit to matter, from immortal mind to mortal mind, from life to death, from truth to error, from love to hate. And those are the key words, and they're opposites. Mind is immortal, evil is mortal. Spirit is the real stuff, substance, and matter is an absence of substance. Soul is the pure spiritual identity, and material sense is the matter-based identity, which is flawed. Principle is system and structure, which is always in balance and harmonious, and its opposite is chaos, always in confusion, always out of balance, always discordant. Life is always alive, expressing the qualities of God, and its opposite, death, is being passive or procrastinating or delayed, always operating in a sense of believing in life, truth, and intelligence as in matter. Truth is pure motive, pure consciousness, and operating with all thought, speech, and action with that purity. And the opposite is operating through impurity. And love is truly the spiritual caring about other people and letting your light shine continuously about what God represents, because you're the image and likeness. Is that the light you're shining? Are you a lighthouse? Or are you in the dark? Because that is hate. That is the opposite of love, which is hate. Wentworth Winslow had 15-minute appointments along with Frederick L. Rassen and Joel Goldsmith. At the end of 15 minutes, whatever the problem was, it was healed. Jesus also healed instantaneously, and so did Mary Baker Eddy. They both healed, brought people back from the belief of death. Wentworth Winslow did the same thing. Bicknell Young brought himself back from the belief of death. We have this story on our website. So, why did I mention Wentworth Winslow a moment ago? Because he received a telegram, probably back about 1920 or 30, before there was international telephone service. And he received a telegram that said three words, 6 treatments, please. He didn't know who it was. He knew it was from South America. He was living in New York. He didn't know what the problem was, how long there had been a problem, what was supposedly the source of the problem. He had 3 things to go by. The number 6, which represented probably 6 days, I want you to work on this, and a treatment. He knew that they were looking for healing. And please, They were pleading with him to please do it. So in other words, their thought was open. Jesus asked the blind man, "Do you believe that you can be healed?" This man that sent the telegram believed that the healing could be accomplished. Three very important functions in three very important words. He did not have any other information, so he didn't have any choice than to do what the study of Christian Science tells us to do. We have, right now on the home page, it'll always be in the menu because we're always changing the home page. It may not be there tomorrow. Well, it'll be there tomorrow because tomorrow is Sunday. But may not be there on the next work day. Because we are always inspired and making changes and so forth. But everything is always in the menu. Often, if we anticipate major changes on the homepage, we will save it and have a link to it so you can see it. But in any event, it's entitled Effective Healing. Some pages we describe it as Heal Everything. And what's the very first step? The very first step is to follow what everyone else has done that have been really super effective at healing, like the three people mentioned. Frederick L. Rawson, Wentworth Winslow, and Joel Goldsmith, the ones that had 15-minute appointments. And, of course, we talk continuously about Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy. So those five all progressed to the point that they could heal instantaneously. So, number one, just like Jesus asked the blind man, "Do you think you have faith you can be healed?" We need to have faith that the healing will be effective. The work will be effective to bring forth the healing. And if we have any lack in our confidence, then read pages 600 to 700 of the textbook, the last 101 pages. And that gives us 486 examples of healings from 85 people, all verified, all have been published in Christian Science Journal, a Christian Science Journal or Sentinel. So they'd already been out in the public without any challenge, and they'd already been verified by the committee that verifies it before they publish it. And so Mary Baker Eddy chose 85 of those people that had approximately six healings apiece to come up with 486 healings. And she published those in that last chapter called Fruitage. And she has that as the last chapter because she wants you to know that you have to go through the steps. Because the healing is the last thing that happens. We have to advance our spiritual understanding before we can expect to have the results. You can't get to the conclusion of a project until you go through all the steps. And the first 17 chapters gives us those steps. What does Isaiah say? Precept upon precept. Precept upon precept. Line upon line. Line upon line. Here a little, there a little. Mary Baker Eddy gives us the spiritual interpretation. She says, don't expect to jump from where you are inundated and believing that you are made up of matter, that you are here because your mother and father had a biological union and produced a piece of matter, and it was in gestation for 9 months, and then came forth, and you ended up being it. And you've gone through a period of growth, And then the normal cycle is you peak out, deteriorate, and you're gone. But that's the lie in Genesis chapter 2, which is prefaced by the statement, there went up a mist. I've been in a fog so thick and dense that you couldn't see your hand if you held it up a couple of inches from your nose. And that's what Genesis chapter 2 is all about. You can't see clearly anything that is true if you're going to follow the belief that Adam and Eve is your real father and mother that traces back to the beginning. Because that's the mortal sinning man. That's not the true image and likeness of God. It doesn't say anything about a mist in Genesis chapter 1. No. In fact, the name for God is Elohim in Genesis chapter 1. And the name for God is different if you look at the original language for Genesis chapter 2. So an interlinear, Strong's is one of the most popular ones, where you can look at every single word in the original language and see the English translation is very valuable. That's why they used to teach the original languages in school. Yeah, people learn Greek and Hebrew, Arabic. That was taught in schools, along with English. Well, now the schools don't teach anything. They don't even teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. They teach you how to turn on a cell phone. Everyone lives on their cell phone. It used to be everyone lived on their computer, then their laptop. Now it's down to a cell phone. Very limited in what you can see. I like a 75-inch screen in front of me and on the left and on the right of me. I want to see the big picture. You can't do that on the cell phone. Impossible. I want to see how everything fits together. Here at the Institute, we make maps, you know, that show how everything connects together. It's a huge diagram. We use it for all kinds of ways to be able to compare and to analyze so that we can present things in as clear a fashion as we can when we give you anything written or a diagram. Of course, these verbal recordings, they're all extemporaneous. But if you really want to learn how to heal, hearing is only one of five functions of your senses. It's only one. If you don't see it in words that are written, you're blocking out a major part of the learning process. And also, you should be making a list, a numbered list of the key points in any sentence or paragraph you read. Certainly any topic would have key points. Numbered list. How are you going to do that? Unless you have a photographic memory, then I suppose you could do it verbally. But we're given eyes for a purpose. And it's not just to select something in a menu. Forget that they don't teach reading in school anymore. That's only a process of evil to dumb down the children so that when they become older and adults, they will willingly accept being controlled by people that want to control others. Don't buy it. Don't take the bait. Don't take the bait. Remember the quote, evil triumphs when good men do nothing. If you don't know how to read, write, or anything about math, you don't have any choice. You don't have any capability to do anything. There are four movies that are highly recommended. One is Remember the Goal. Another one is Pay It Forward. A third one, Stand and Deliver. This third one, there's some profanity in the beginning of it, but it's mild compared to what is used in today's world on a regular basis by everyone, even on television and radio shows. It's really sad. I mean, we are at the level, if not below the level, of Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah had to be destroyed because God said, give me one man that is worthy to be saved. And there was not a single man. And man is a generic term, woman or child. It was all destroyed. And there was one person with his wife that walked out before it was destroyed. And God said, don't look back. What does that mean? If you've overcome evil or you decided to take your stand and transform your life by moving into the spiritual, don't look back at a former life of evil or seeing evil in others. Don't look back. And the wife couldn't overcome the temptation, so she looked back and she was turned to salt. Don't look back. Salt is often referred to as a preservative. If they want to keep beef or something over a long period of time, they will, you know, immerse it in salt and get it all salty. And then it'll stay good for a long time. So a preservative, what are you preserving? You want to preserve your image of evil? Well, that's what she wanted to do, and she was turned to salt. I'll think of the fourth movie offhand. I let myself be distracted. I don't recall at the moment, but it'll come back. God is all knowing. We have an index on the website for giving, G-I-V-I-N-G. And it is stories about people that gave and what the result was. Now, if you're going to give, don't give to an institution. Unless you're involved and you know that like 98% of it is being given to the purpose of what they're advertising for. It should take no more than about 2%. To be administering the organization. The wealthiest man in the world teamed up with the President of the United States and they developed an agency called DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. And through the research of the programmers of the man running it, the wealthiest man, who's an expert programmer, and he hired a team of expert programmers. They discovered that all of these big charitable organizations are a money laundering operation. Money laundering operation. UNICEF, UNICEF, is an organization of United Nations. They have these heart bleeding advertisements showing children that are just pathetically hungry, without homes or parents, and try to get you to donate. They said $5 will buy one meal. Are they kidding? You can go in a restaurant and eat for $5 or a fast food place. In these countries, you know, 50 cents will buy a meal. So right away, they're multiplying it by 10. They're taking 90% of it and only using 50 cents to buy the food. And they say $5 will buy one meal. And they're talking about countries where they probably only earn $50 in a whole month. These are corrupt. They deem that the most out of $100 that gets down to the purpose of what they advertise for is only $5 out of every 100. 5%. That's the most. And some of them don't pass anything down to the advertised purpose. It's zero. So it's between 0 and 5% that actually gets down to what the purpose is they're advertising for. 5%. And that's the maximum. If you don't know the people personally and you can't monitor where the money actually goes, I mean, they should have certified audits that are publicly available. But they don't. They don't give any accounting to anyone. No. Because it's all an illegal operation. And this is the United Nations for that particular one. This open society thing. You all know who was responsible for that. He's gone now, but his son is in there. Another one is a worldwide foundation named after the person whose husband was one of the presidents of the United States. You know who it is. I don't want to name the name because we don't want to pinpoint personalities. It's bad enough to talk about the function that they were doing. The best thing to do is to start at home. Do you see any homeless person on the street? Do you see anybody in a wheelchair? Do you see anybody that looks like they're disabled in any way? Do you see anybody begging at a department store at the entrance, hoping somebody will give them some kind of money so they can buy food? Don't give them the money. Take them to a place. Take them to a grocery store. Buy food for them. Give them the food. You can't trust that if you gave them money, that they aren't going to buy drugs or tobacco or liquor. If they are out of money, chances are they were not a very good money manager. So giving them money is the worst thing to do. You got to take care of the need. What is the purpose? What do they want to use the money for? Do they have food, shelter, and clothing? Transportation? Or the money to take public transportation? How about trying to find them a place to live and paying for it? How about trying to get them into a job training program? How about just asking them questions and find out what their skills are, what their profession has been, what kind of work they've done, what kind of education they have? Take it as a project. Just select one human being that is living on the street. Take it on as a project. Be a father or a brother or a sister to them. Take an interest in solving that particular problem. And if you've got a lot of money, like the wealthiest man in the world, set up an organization under your control that report to you through a series of management levels, and you can do good for millions and millions of people by following that same kind of a system that was just described. If everyone in the United States would take on one person that is in need, we wouldn't have anybody in need at all. Promote people learning time management. Promote people learning goal management. Learning priority management. Think about structure and system instead of emotion. Set up rules. If you're going to give housing to somebody, set up rules. They have to do something and give them several options. where they have to solve their problem. Whether it's education, whether it's training in these other things that were mentioned about time management and goal management and so forth. Have a monitoring system. It would be so easy to solve the problem in any country if the ones that are doing okay would just do the very first step that is required for healing. And that is develop a life of giving. No one has to give a lot. If they would give for one person everything that's needed. And that starts with opening your heart to the golden rule. It works. It's not outdated. It's very much operative. In fact, it's self-operating. All you have to do is comply with the rules. The rules automatically work. Love automatically works to bring harmony. The only reason there's any war at all is someone is trying to get something for nothing. They want to control. They want to exercise their ego. That's the only reason we have any wars. Someone is trying to cheat someone else. And they want to control them. War is fabricated. There shouldn't be any such thing as a lobbyist. They should be illegal. A lobbyist is somebody that is trying to persuade somebody to do what they want to have done. Let the event make its own attraction. People will beat their path to the doorway if it's something they want. In other words, by beat the path, it means like walking through the jungle and one person walks and there's not much, but if you got a million people going down that same path, it beats it so it's a smooth path going through the jungle. So you be the one that everyone wants. You create what everyone wants. Create a worthwhile product or a worthwhile service that is going to benefit everybody that uses it, and it's at a fair price, and it's the product quality that that market wants and can afford, and share, share, share. Live a life of giving. The largest retail organization in the world started with one man that wanted to give everybody a low price and a guaranteed return 100% of your money anytime, anywhere, for any reason. Because he wanted every customer to be 100% satisfied. Do we want to be satisfied? Do we want others to be satisfied that we're dealing with? If we don't, then we have to change our whole attitude. We can't even begin step one if we have the wrong attitude about giving. Look at Solomon. King Solomon, the son of David, the one that slew Goliath, he wanted one thing when he succeeded the throne of his son, or his father, I mean. When he succeeded David as the king, he wanted one thing. He wanted the wisdom of God to treat everyone in his kingdom fairly and honestly. That's all he wanted. He didn't want anything for himself. But what did he receive? Number one, he received the wisdom he asked for. Number two, he has been the wealthiest man known in the history of mankind. And when the Queen of Sheba visited him to find out if the rumors about him that he was so wealthy was really true, she came back after visiting him and saying his wealth is greater than anyone has said. And why? Because everyone was treated as they wanted to be treated, and love permeated the entire staff of the king, the entire staff of the palace was filled with love. Everybody was happy. Everybody was treating the way others wanted to be treated and the way they wanted to be treated. Love. That was the reason that he was wealthy beyond measure. They lived love in the whole castle, in the whole kingdom. You know what love represents? Nurturing. Nurturing good. Nurturing perfection. Bringing everything up to the standard of perfection. That's what love is. That's the number one quality of love, is nurturing. Do you have a relationship with anybody about anything? Do you care about them benefiting from the relationship? Then make it happen. Frederick L. Rawson, who was mentioned as one of the greatest Christian scientists of all time, said, "Our purpose on life is to make other people happy." That's a golden rule. He condensed it down to one thing: make other people happy. Forget about yourself. The truth is, you will be happier than you've ever been in before in your life. If you have never made a substantial gift to someone anonymously so they didn't even know who you were, you have no idea what the benefit is and what the feeling is to have yourself when you've done that. You may have to be cagey to keep your identity anonymous, but it can be done. Andrew Carnegie, one of the wealthiest ones in the U.S., he built a company that he ended up selling to a group of investors in Wall Street back in the early 1900s or late 1800s, and they named it U.S. Steel. I think it was $350 million that he sold it for. Back in those days, that'd be like the wealthiest man in the world. It'd be billions and billions and millions. I don't know, maybe $1 trillion. And after he sold it, he says, "Now what am I going to do with my life?" Because he spent his life building up his companies. So he decided he was going to give it away. But he didn't give away the money. He used the money for what he really wanted to have done, and that was to have universities and libraries in places where they could benefit society. And I think it was Ireland he came from, so he did it in Ireland and he did it in the U.S. The one thing he did that he could have improved on was to try to be anonymous, and he didn't. He named everything after his own name. Andrew Carnegie University. Andrew Carnegie, how about Carnegie Hall? Carnegie Hall, one of the most famous places for musical performances. Named after him. That's it. That was his deal. They have libraries and universities all with his name on it. Or maybe a particular building in a university. So, if we can figure out how to do it, and it can be done, it can be done. If you've got enough money, you can hire the best people, and you can keep it private. Disney World was built before anybody knew who really owned it. Because when they were accumulating the property, it was a massive amount of property there in Orlando, Florida, and it was all done in land trust. And nobody knew who the owner was, the beneficiary of the trust. They only had a trustee, and a trustee was not an individual. I mean, through layers of partnerships and corporations, you can conceal who the real one is at the end of the string. You can keep it quiet. And you will have a better feeling, you'll have a better value of yourself if you do not have ego involved in the situation at all. Unless you're the wealthiest man in the world and everyone knows exactly what you look like, I suppose you could have a disguise on when you go around giving money. But basically, unless you're known by everybody, you could walk through an area and give money to people on the street. And better than that is to find out what their problem is and do what was suggested earlier in this recording. But there's a lot of people that are scams that come up to you and beg. I had an important flight to do, to go on when I was in business. And the flight left, I think it was like 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning. And I lived about a 2-3 hour drive away. So I went there the night before and stayed at a hotel right there in the airport area. And after I took a shower and had something to eat, I thought I'd take a little walk. I went outside, and as soon as I went outside, somebody came up to me and wanted to get $50. And this was several decades ago. And I said, well, why do you need the money? And it was right at an off-ramp from the freeway. And he said, my car is up there at the top, and I've got a flat tire. And it's really bad. I need to really replace the tire. And there's a tire shop down the street. So if you give me $50, I can go buy a tire and get it installed and be on my way. I said, well, let's go up and take a look at the tire. I exposed him right away. There was no car. There was no flat tire. He wanted $50. So I went into the management and reported, because it was a good hotel, and they, if they knew what was going on and knew that the people coming out of the hotel were getting fleeced from unethical and immoral and illegal activity, they would want to know about it. See, that's a point where we need to report it. Evil triumphs when good men do nothing. Don't be the kind of person that you're going to remember the next day, gee, I wish I would have done something. You've got to be alert all the time. Take action when action is needed. Dynamic. The life of man is dynamic. Are we dynamic in the way we live our life? Are we wasting a lot of hours a day on entertainment? Do we have a time schedule? Do we have goals that we definitely want to get accomplished for the day, and they are pointing to our longer-term goal plan? Do we want to improve our spirituality? Do we want to be able to heal any problem that we're faced with at any time? Oh, let me finish what I was started to say about when Wentworth Winslow, who had the man in another country, South America, and the value of purity. The only way he could figure that he could heal the situation was to live a life at the highest level of purity that he could understand and implement. So he decided that regarding all thought, speech, and action that he did every moment of the day, that he was going to analyze to make sure that it was going to be the highest level of his understanding of purity, which obviously is spirit, not matter. He had to devote every moment of whatever he was doing to make sure it was the highest level of purity. And that's what he did. And then he got the second message that said, 6 more treatments, please. The first one just said, 6 treatments, please. So this one had four. And I think they charged by the word or the character. So they probably just learned how to really say it briefly. So he continued on with the work he was doing. And then he got a third message. And it said, it was a friend. He had become insane. The first six treatments healed him, but no one around him believed he was healed, so they were still treating him like he was insane. So the second set of six treatments was to heal the thought of those that were his friends and relatives so they would be receptive to the truth that he had been healed. And probably that if he was in an insane asylum, probably the doctors in the insane asylum, psychologists, psychiatrists, whatever they were, administrators. So that was the story about a man's purity touched on those that wanted him to be of assistance and how it brought forth healing. We can do the same thing. This is a principle. This is a structure with a system. We teach you all about the system and how to do it. And we have our on the website step-by-step instructions in a numbered list and in the proper sequence of exactly what you need to do. The two books you need to study absolutely continuously for the rest of your life. Really 18 books, and one is the textbook, and then the other 16 books, and then the book by Helen Wright. Now, she has many wonderful books, but that one in particular helps you become an expert on each of the seven synonymous terms for God, and everything is from the textbook. She just organized it and connected the dots to make it easy to understand how one connects with another one. And listening to these prayer treatments is very valuable. Remember, you got to use all five senses. So the system includes recording everything you do, the original text from the book you're reading from, and it has to be in your own voice. You have to be actively involved. If you take any advanced classes in whatever your profession is, you will find that if they're the very top people in the industry, they will say things more than once. And they'll phrase it differently. But they'll be all meaning the same thing. These are the top echelon. Because they know what it takes in order to learn something. But the real way to learn something is you have to do it. One of the greatest ways is to teach it. Teach it to yourself. Be a teacher. Tear it apart. Put it in your own words. And compare it to the original to make sure you're on track. And when you get done with the textbook, you start all over and do it again. When you get done with your divinity revealed, you go to the beginning and do it all over again. Or at least go to chapter 4 through 10 and do it again. Put it in your own words. Make your own numbered list of the key points. If you look at our website, you will find that it's probably different than any website you ever dealt with. We have everything in numbered lists. Because key points. Key points. That's the focus. That's what all the purpose of reading is, to find out what is the key point. And so we give it to you straight. Forget all the extra words being in prose format. We give it to you in numbered lists. In the sequence you need to know it. With every important word you need to know. So in a fraction of the time that you would spend reading the prose, you can see the meat. Your life has to be structured. No one can teach you. Me or no one else can teach you You have to learn. We provide the information, but you have to learn. You have to be dissatisfied with where you are right now in your life. And that hunger needs to be an insatiable desire. And if you don't have an insatiable desire to improve, but you want to improve, then read that last chapter on fruitage. Read the parables of Jesus. We have them all on the website with the spiritual interpretation with deep analysis on each one. Click on the index for Jesus. The authors of the parables, the analysis of the parables is stamp, like a postage stamp, and Moss, M-A-A-S, Stamp and Moss. Excellent. Very advanced Christian Scientists. Very spiritual in their nature. Anyone can do it. You have to be a genius. What is a genius? A genius is someone that decides to do something that's of benefit to everybody concerned. They devise a plan that they think will be effective from beginning to end. They monitor the plan. They don't let anything interfere with their pursuing the plan with total tenacity and perseverance and punctuality and facility. And they monitor what they're doing. They refine anything that's needed to be refined. And you can only find that out as you are doing the plan. Make any adjustments that are needed that you find that need to be made, and you follow it through to the end. Out of 100 people, how many people do you think would do that? None. How about 1,000? How about 10,000? How about 100,000? None. You probably have to have 1,000,000 people that start to have one person that finishes. And what's the difference between the one that finishes and the one that does not? What is the difference between a genius and somebody that is not a genius? It is the internal burning desire for self-improvement. It can be developed. It can be nurtured. We say in these prayer treatments, if you're not a genius, cultivate it. Nurture it. Nurture yourself to become a genius. Take it a step at a time. Start with a little project. One that you don't really want to do, but you know needs to be done. Practice on a little project. And then a larger one. And then a larger one. Each time you do it, you will find that you have a self-satisfaction that is so much more important than the aggravation that it took to do it, that you will want to take on a bigger one. So think about Isaiah. Step at a time, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Think about the race between the turtle and the rabbit. The rabbit took off fast and he got tired immediately. He laid down at the side of the pathway and went to sleep. In the meantime, the turtle walked right on through the finish line before the rabbit even woke up. Be the turtle. A step at a time. You don't have to accomplish a miracle in a day. In fact, nothing is a miracle. A miracle is only something you don't understand. Jesus did not perform any miracles. The people that say that, they don't have any clue of to what he did, how he did it. Christian Science explains it in detail from beginning to end. Einstein said, after studying Christian Science, you know, he attended the churches and he went to the reading room to study in isolation, solitude. He said that science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. What did he say about the textbook and Mary Baker Eddy? He said, "Blessed art thou," with a capital T, as if she was a god. "Blessed art thou, for everything that is in this book." What else did he say? Imagine, a woman discovered this 80 years ago. She discovered it in 1866, so that puts it about 1946. He came to that realization. He could have known Mary Baker Eddy if he would have discovered Christian Science at the beginning of his adulthood. It was about, I think, 1900 that he discovered the E equal MC squared, which is the relativity formula. Has to do with mass and so forth. He could have met Mary Baker Eddy. But no, he didn't get on the ball until 46 years later. Or let's say 36. She passed in 1910. But after his friend, Dr. Underwood, had been healed of radiation, the only one out of the whole team of Atomic Energy Commission scientists, that's when Einstein realized what he needed to be studying. Imagine if everyone in school at all ages had a class every day about Christian Science and had obviously qualified people to be the instructors, but they could start. If one person would just start one school. In fact, with the internet, you don't even need to have physical locations. It can be all on the internet. It only takes one person to start. The door is open. It will unfold for the people that have the motive and want to take that on as their project. We have lots of ideas. Anyone listening to this that wants to help all society and have a life of giving, we can work with you. Mary Baker Eddy was the only one that was licensed to have a metaphysical college and be able to certify people up through doctorate degree. And instead of PhD, it was termed CSD, Doctorate of Christian Science. And her final class was in 1898. And then she devoted her life to continue her writings and used her writings as her teaching tool instead of the college. So in her final class, everyone that was in that class was individually invited by her, and she selected her most advanced students. And on the third day, their assignment at the end of the day was to come back the next morning with a healing that they had performed from when they left the class the prior day. Everyone did it. And everyone that completed that final class was given a CSD degree. She gave that class 7 special prayers, called Diapason of Heaven. The recommended dictionary to use as your go-to number one source is the Dictionary of 1828 by Noah Webster. 1828. This is 26. So we're talking 198 years ago. 1828. It's been reprinted many times, and you can buy it very reasonably in the full written version. It's available in software. If you want to look up just one word and get an abbreviated definition of it, it's free online. Just search for 1828. We have the link on our website. But he quotes the Bible profusely in the usage of a variety of words in the dictionary. We don't know of another dictionary that does that. He had so much desire for people to be educated properly, he wrote different books to be used to educate children. I will select the prayer because there are seven prayers, one for each of the seven synonymous terms. And I shall recite to you the Diapason of Heaven for number 5, which is a focus on life. And by number 5, it's following the order of the development of thought that is in Genesis chapter 1, which starts with mind, which is the very first one, is light. So mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, number 5, truth and love, 6 and 7. So I shall recite to you now the Diapason of Heaven with a focus on life. And at the end, I will say, Amen. And if any thought occurs to me while I am reciting that, it will be added after the Amen with the date and time that this was recorded, which will not be the date and time that is on the file, because the file will say the date and time that it went through our process here and ran it through software to get rid of any extraneous noises and that kind of thing. But we do not edit anything. The words that I've recited here will be the exact words on the released version. So any thought will be tacked on after I say Amen, and then with the date and the time, and then when I say the end, that is really the end. Diapason of Heaven with a focus on life. Life is holy. We must hallow this word, for it is a sacred name for God. Declare often, there is only one life, and that is God. There is no personal life. My life is God, an infinite, incorporeal, all-encompassing, all-present, all-active, everlasting life. Declare that God, good, is the only life of man and the universe. Life is divine. Divine life is my God, and my God is life. Life is enthroned in my consciousness. This is the Word of God. Declare all the truths about life. Claim this revealed life as yours. All of life is right where you are right now. Amen. Yes, there are a couple of thoughts that came to the surface in the last moment. One is, Mary Baker Eddy devoted time every hour of the day to self-examine her consciousness, to make sure that she was only thinking, talking, and acting in the highest degree of purity about everyone and everything. She, like Jesus, was attacked by everyone all the time. When she passed on, nobody stood up for her. The church bureaucracy threatened everyone that if they even mentioned her name or provided any notes or any written material about their life with Mary Baker Eddy when they were living in her home, that they would be subject to excommunication. Not a single one stood up for her. Pathetic. Really pathetic. Not one loyal student out of the millions of people that had healings. They all turned their head the other way. Just like the story of the Good Samaritan. One person helped the man that was in great need. In this case, no one did. Almost the exact same experience as Jesus. He had six that came to his crucifixion and none came to the trial. And he taught 50 or 60,000 people probably in those two sessions on the hillside. It was 4,000 men and 5,000 women. 4,000 men in one, 5,000 men in another, for a total of 9,000. And they didn't count the women and children, so that would have probably added, been four or five times that many with a wife and three or four or five children in each family. And he had six show up at the crucifixion. None showed up at the trial. Mary Baker Eddy had nobody show up anywhere. And they accepted the fact that her picture was removed from the textbook. If we try to separate the discoverer from the discovery, don't expect to get any benefit from the discovery, because you will be violating the commandment, do not steal, and do not bear false witness. The second thought that came to me is that she declares in the second sentence, or third sentence, declare often. You see, we are barraged all the time with evil. All the time. So we have to use the tool of repetition and living what we're learning, because we won't remember it unless we live it. We have to do it. We have to do it. The greatest teachers of all time. And, you know, you can't really teach adults. You can just offer the information, and the ones who really want it will learn it. But I've asked one of the top teachers, who said the same thing about three times in different ways, and I said, you're supposed to be one of the best. And why are you repeating the same thing in a little bit different way, but basically it's the same key point? Why are you saying it three times? And he told me the facts about the human brain. He said, if I say it once, you won't remember it at all. If I say it twice, you'll remember it longer. Three times, you'll remember it a little bit longer. And I said, well, how can you remember it forever, for good? He told me very frankly, you have to do it. You have to do it. You have to live it. You have to make it you. Vladimir Ashkenazy, a Russian pianist, was probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, pianist of all time. In a Q&A at one of his performances, he was asked by a well-known critic of concert pianists. He says, I've followed you around to several different concerts, and I never find a single flaw in anything that you're performing. How can you do it? I find flaws with other people, famous pianists. Never a single one with you. How do you do it? Remember, he was Russian, so I will try to mock his accent because I've seen live videos of him. He says, I practice until the music plays me. Contemplate that. Do we want to be able to heal anything and everything? Then we have to study and learn about God and man and the relationship until the music plays us. we have to let God play us. We have to let the laws of God be us exercised and performed in every thought, speech, and action we do. Are we getting self out of the way? Do we trust enough to let God's laws be our way of life? That's the way to do it. The topic of this prayer treatment, and you can tell because there's lots of rough spots in it, I'm sure. It is 05 for being the fifth synonymous term, which is life. And the text of the title is Life of Man is Dynamic. It is 07:33 a.m. on Saturday, March 21, 2026. Thank you for listening to this extemporaneous prayer treatment by Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. The end.